morning and welcome to this month's Hancock & Whitney Bank's Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speaker and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, please email them to david.lundgren@hancockbank.com and he will take them if time allows at the end of the call. Today we have Chief Investment Officer John Portwood and Investment Directors Greg Hodleski, David Lundgren, Luther McDougall, and Jeff Tangus. And with that, I'll pass the call on to David Lundgren, who will be the moderator.
Great. Thank you, Ashley. And good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us once again. And John, I think the most appropriate place to start is Washington, D.C. this month. And earlier this month, we had a government shutdown that lasted a little bit over 2 weeks long. Obviously, a lot of budget wrangling. We had the issue surrounding the debt ceiling yet once again, and there was even talk about a technical default by the U.S. And I guess fortunately there was some temporary relief in regards to the debt ceiling and the government shutdown was ended. Bring us up to date on where we stand now and what's next. Are we going to have another one of these debt ceiling issues in the near future to where it kind of weighs on everyone, including the markets? Give us your thoughts.
Well, Dave, unfortunately, as most of us probably know, there is no permanent relief in sight from budget battles and debt ceiling battles. It's going to start again probably, or we'll be hearing more about it, I guess, next month. It will intensify in early 2014 as we get as we approach the next deadline. It could be a little easier going this time, I guess. We probably really don't know, but in terms of, I guess, the ongoing battle about the size and the cost and the intrusiveness of government, I guess, in our lives, there is really no permanent relief in sight to that. That's going to continue probably for an indefinite period, and I guess we'll just have to, you know, take it step by step and see how it works out. But there is certainly, you know, no indication that any sort of long-lasting decisions will be made anytime soon to sort of clean the slate and allow us to forget about this for a while. So this is going to be probably a permanent part of the economic environment, the economic landscape for perhaps, you know, years to come, and it's just something that we're just going to have to get used to and do the best we can to, you know, analyze it, see how it might affect the economy and investments going forward, and just work with it over time.
Okay. And I guess for the short term, you know, I know some of the initial indicators that we saw look like, you know, consumer confidence and business confidence was, you know, somewhat negatively impacted, especially during that two-week period. What is the impact on economic growth, specifically for the fourth quarter, and where do you think the economy is headed for the remainder of the quarter and then even into the beginning of 2014?
Well, when you look at the confidence numbers, in some cases the confidence numbers are a little bit better than they were, as you might imagine, during the debt ceiling crisis. Unfortunately, when you look at these levels of confidence, they're still below where they were prior to the crash in 2008. For example, there's a new report out recently that looks at chief financial officer sentiment that's produced by a magazine and CFO magazine in conjunction with Duke University. And while the CFO sentiment is much better than it was a little while ago, it's still running considerably below where it was in the years prior to 2008. So it kind of gives you an idea of what the long-term sentiment picture looks like, and the same exists, of course, for consumers. Consumer confidence is, better than it was a month or so back, but it's still, in a long-term sense, considerably lower than it was prior to 2008. It looks like the third quarter of GDP, just getting back to some of the recent numbers, some recent numbers we've seen on durable goods orders and things like that suggest that the GDP number for the third quarter will be something below 2%. Nobody really has any high expectations for the fourth quarter either, so it looks like something below 2% as well. And the first half, on average, I guess, was about 1.5%, somewhere in that range. So it looks like this is going to be a relatively subpar year, but then we've had a lot of subpar years since the recession in 2008. Some of you on this call may remember that, you know, we talked about, you know, and have talked about quite often PIMCO's, you know, new normal idea in which the economy has reset to a different level after the crash for a number of reasons, demographic, debt, all sorts of things, and that we probably have to get used to something like a 2% GDP growth rate on average instead of 3. If you look back over the last 4 years since the recession bottomed, you know, roughly a third of the time we have seen GDP growth rates exceeding 3%. You know, roughly a third of the quarters saw GDP growth rate at 3% or better, which is relatively low. It should be just the opposite. We should have seen, you know, 70% of the quarters, I guess, since 2004 with GDP growth rates well above 3%. So it certainly has been a subpar period for economic growth, and unfortunately, there really isn't a lot of data out there to suggest that that's about to change anytime soon. When you consider the debt ceiling and the budget issues and, you know, the costs and confusion and complexities of, you know, the Affordable Care Act for 2014, it's hard to come to the conclusion that we're going to see what everybody has, you know, tended to call the breakout or, you know, an acceleration to 3% GDP growth to get back to something that we, you know, thought in the past was somewhat, you know, somewhat normal. So it looks like early 2014 is going to be relatively slow as well. So, you know, the good news, I guess, is that all of the leading indicators that we see are in positive trends. The unfortunate part of it is that, you know, the GDP levels we're seeing in some cases, according to some measurements, are still sort of at recessionary levels, that, you know, at least things that were considered recessionary levels back before 2008. So it does appear that we are on a lower GDP trajectory, and, you know, at the present time, it doesn't look like that's necessarily, you know, a danger as far as a recession, you know, pre-recession indicator is concerned, but it does have long-term consequences if indeed it does last for a long time. Then, of course, that suggests that, you know, we might have some issues with relatively high unemployment for much longer than we would like, you know, relatively slow earnings growth rates, for example, for corporations compared to what used to be the case. But, of course, that we don't know exactly how that's going to work out, but at least, you know, for the near future, it looks like we're going to continue to, you know, muddle along at about a 2% rate or so. I might also mention, you know, what's happening overseas in terms of credit growth. If you look at Europe, Germany and France are doing okay. France not as well as Germany, but okay is not particularly strong. And if you look at credit growth in Europe, year over year, the last number we saw was a negative 2%. So the banks are not anxious to lend money. They're trying to increase their capital bases, and so, you know, Europe is sort of in a real bind. If you look at credit growth in the U.S., it's been positive since 2008. But unfortunately, total credit growth in the U.S., if you look at, you know, year-over-year measures quarter by quarter, it's running about 4% positive, which is not bad, but when you look back prior to 2008, you see many years where it ranged from 6% to 8%. So that kind of gives you an idea of where we are from an economic growth standpoint. We're, you know, we're not getting any worse. We're just not getting a whole lot better.
Okay. Thank you, John. Greg, you with us this morning?
Yeah, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Let's talk about stocks for a minute. And I guess, you know, given all the political distractions that we had in October, I think it was somewhat surprising what a great month October was for stocks. The S&P 500 was up 4.6% for the month, and small cap stocks, as measured by the Russell 2000, were up 2.5%. So really good numbers for the month. And for the year, the S&P 500 is up 25.3% with 2 months to go. Just amazing. And the Russell 2000 up almost 31% at 30.9 for the first 10 months of the year. So, you know, obviously, I don't think many, if any, body expected this type of year. So I guess the question is, how long does this last and where do we go from here?
Well, I think politically the market doesn't care. It would have been political suicide to, you know, be the party that caused the government to default. So I think the market just kind of looked past that. I read an interesting statistic yesterday that when we've had a strong market like we've had, and typically that's been supported by a strong economy, which in this case is not reality in 2013, the final 2 months of the year have been positive. So there's more than something like an 80% chance that November and December will probably continue to be strong, and we're going to end up with a very, very strong year. If somebody would have asked me that we were going to be up this much at the beginning of the year, I would have said not a chance, just given the backdrop. Looking out further, I mean, the market keeps going up, yet again we don't have the earnings growth, we don't have a strong economy. Valuations are probably up close to 20% from the beginning of the year, again, looking at, just even looking at forward PEs. So, you know, are we in a bubble? Probably not yet, but that's something, that may be a reality that we have to confront somewhere in the future. And I guess, again, using my crystal ball, just looking out ahead with Janet Yellen taking over for Bernanke, I think she has a reputation from what I've read to be even more accommodative. And I think it's hard to argue that one of the main reasons that the stock market is up is that a lot of that quantitative easing or printing of money is somehow finding its way into the market, and it's driving stock prices up, along with just the simple fact that interest rates continue to be low. You can't generate a decent return in the money markets or in the bond market. So, you know, a lot of people look at the market, and it's always that herd mentality where when stock prices are going up, everyone feels like they're missing the boat, so they'll, you know, they jump in too. But again, if Yellen is that much more accommodative and we don't see some strength in the underlying economy, I wouldn't be surprised if she continues the QE or printing, the stimulus, if you will, further into 2014. And for all I know, she may even do more than Bernanke. So that, again, could propel the market higher. But, again, what we're doing is we're focusing on P.E. ratios. And, you know, at some point, it's going to get into, you know, we're in a bubble. And I think, you know, perhaps a catalyst for another correction. We haven't really had a significant correction since June of last year when we were actually down, I think, more than 10%. We've had a few pullbacks here and there, 5 and 7%. But, again, certainly, you know, I've been making that call all year that we should have some kind of a correction just to kind of help consolidate prices. But just hasn't happened. So at least for the rest of this year, I think it's onward and upward.
Okay. Thank you for those comments. Luther, good morning.
Good morning.
Jet. Greg touched on the Federal Reserve, and, you know, I think if you think back about 3-4 months ago, many strategists believed that tapering by the Fed would begin before year-end. Now it appears early 2014 at the earliest, perhaps. And if you could, first remind our listeners what is meant by tapering, and then explain what has changed and when tapering likely will begin.
Okay, and let me go back even a little bit further prior to tapering in that the Federal Reserve's overall job as far as monetary policy, in their own words, is to promote economic growth to the extent that we have full employment with moderate inflation. and taking some of their own numbers, full employment would be 6 to 6.5% unemployment and inflation at 2% or lower. That's typically and historically, you know, what the Fed's tried to do. In the current environment, at least over the past few years, the Fed had lowered interest rates, attempting to boost economic growth by changing the federal funds rate. They moved it down and down and down, and finally we got down to where the interest rates were at basically zero. And then we entered uncharted territory in that the Fed had to find something else to do to get the economy to grow. So what they did as part of their, I guess, third phase of quantitative easing was started buying bonds from the general public, you know, a year or so ago. What they've been doing is buying $85 billion worth of bonds every month in an attempt to keep interest rates down to help stimulate economic growth. Now, back in June of this year, it appeared as if the economy was picking up a little speed. In May, we had some good economic numbers. In June, they were also fairly good. So the consensus started building, even using the Fed's own words, that they would begin to taper their purchasing, meaning that they would reduce the amount of bonds that they were buying every month because that type of quantitative easing, or to that extent, was no longer needed. Now, we have to remember that with tapering, they're not tightening monetary policy. It's just less accommodative. So that was the original thing that they wanted to do, maybe taper from $85 billion a month to $75 billion a month. And that was supposed to happen in September. But very unexpectedly in September, the Fed announced that they would not begin to taper the quantitative easing program. And afterwards, we found out that it was a really close call and that there were a lot of the Fed governors that wanted to stop or to start tapering, and then the rest finally, you know, led by Bernanke, that said, no, we're not going to do anything. And part of that was because In August, we added 193,000 new jobs. In September, we added 148,000 new jobs. The forecast for October is that we only added 120,000 new jobs, and they're actually forecasting that the unemployment rate is going to rise when we see the October numbers. So because of that, the tapering program has kind of been put on hold. And Greg mentioned that Mrs. Yellen may be even more dovish than the current Fed Chairman Bernanke. We'll have to wait and see on that, and I'll touch on that briefly in a few minutes. But it looks like for right now, the earliest that there would be any so-called tapering would be at the Federal Reserve's March meeting of next year. And that is all data-dependent, as they say themselves.
Luther, why don't we go off script a little bit, and I think it'd be an appropriate time to talk about Janet Yellen. Back on October 9th, President Obama nominated Ms. Yellen to be chair of the Federal Reserve. So if you could, just give us a brief background on her and how you think the Fed will change at all, assuming she is confirmed.
Okay. She does have a very impressive resume. She is an academic. She has no business or finance experience. Her background is all economics. Starting with way back, she graduated summa cum laude from Brown University with a degree in economics, and then she went on to get her Ph.D. in economics from Yale. After that, she started teaching at Harvard, and then after that joined the Federal Reserve Board of Governors as an economist. From there, she moved on to be a professor at the University of California at Berkeley. She's also served on the Council of Economic Advisors. She served on under President Bill Clinton. And then in 2004, she was the president and chief executive officer of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. And then in 2010, she was made vice chairman of the Federal Reserve. So a very, very impressive academic background. She's been around the Fed for some time. All indications that we have is she's been a very strong supporter of everything that the current Fed Chairman Bernanke has done. I can't remember any time she ever dissented from any of the votes, which would be largely driven by what he wants to do. Greg did mention that she might even be more accommodative than the existing board members or Bernanke himself. That's entirely possible. But I think she is going to be more so than anybody else, because of her background, extremely data-dependent upon what she's going to want to do. So whether we have to wait until after March before tapering begins is going to be very, very much determined by how the economy grows over the next few months, or doesn't grow. You know, theoretically, there had been some talk of increasing quantitative easing and buying more bonds per month. I think that's kind of out of the question, because the Fed's balance sheet is already extremely bloated, and there's some talk of the existing policies creating bubbles in certain sectors of the economy. But I do think that given what we've heard from her before, she could continue the quantitative easing program, the current one, for some time, even past March. But we shall have to wait and see.
Great. Thank you, Luther. Jeff Tangas, good morning.
Hey, good morning, David.
Hey. Let's talk about bonds a little bit. Not quite as exciting as the stock market here this past month. We didn't see a tremendous amount of movement in interest rates. Yield on the 10-year Treasury remained relatively flat in October, started the month out at about 260 and fell modestly to end the month at about 255. Anything exciting to discuss about bonds this month, and do rates stay in this range for the remainder of the year?
Well, it continues to be all eyes on the Fed, like the stock market. That seems to be the only thing that matters these days. I don't think anybody in the bond market is contemplating the Fed not tapering at some point in the future. It's just a question of when. So, after some a kind of a relief rally we saw back in late September and early October, where rates dropped about a half a percentage points or 50 basis points, they touched originally about 3%. As you mentioned, they got down to somewhere in the mid 250-255 level. So that was a nice rally in the 10-year government treasury security. And that was mostly just, again, on the backs of a relief rally of the Fed not tapering right away. Also, the government shutdown had a big role in that as well. People not necessarily thinking of the direct impact, but more or less the indirect impact that John was talking about. When the government shuts down, that tends to take a little wind out of the economic sails. So that's probably going to mean some weaker economic data. In the meantime, we've also had some pretty good news on the price of oil and gas, which is good for inflation. So inflation news has generally been pretty positive. So it's been a more a positive tone recently in the bond markets. A little bit of that is starting to wear off, however. The bond market is starting to trade back up into the 2.6 range on the 10-year Treasury. And so it looks like we're probably going to continue to be in this range, somewhere between 2.5% and 3%, depending upon what the latest news out of the Fed or the latest news out of Washington is. And given inflation and everything else we see out there, that's probably about right for interest rates. That trading range makes some sense. We really don't anticipate rates moving dramatically higher unless we do see some much stronger economic activity, or perhaps the Fed dramatically changes their tune. But as Luther said, with Janet Yellen coming in, it's unlikely that the Fed's going to become much more hawkish. So we kind of think that it's going to be steady as she goes within this trading range. Outside of interest rates in general and the treasuries, the corporate bond world has been a very good performer after underperforming treasuries and spreads widening and interest rates going up faster on corporate bonds than on treasuries prior to September. That reversed course, and corporate spreads have narrowed again, which means corporate bonds have been a better performer than treasuries in this declining interest rate environment. So that bodes well for us as a heavy-duty corporate investor. That means our portfolios should have performed pretty well over the last couple months. So again, the big picture is looking forward that we really don't see a whole lot of movement either way, up or down, outside of this trading range of about 2.5% to 3% until we get into the early part of next year and get a little bit better feel for what the Fed's temperature is going to be on implementing their tapering at some point.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. I don't have any questions at this point, so thank you, everyone, for joining. Our next scheduled call will be Tuesday, December 3rd, and we look forward to speaking to you then. Thanks.